Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the Tuesday RotoWire Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, sponsored by FanDuel, who'd like to remind you to be sports rich. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John McKechnie. If you're out there on Twitter, you can give John a follow at Johnny McKex. If you're out there on Twitter, give me a follow at Jakeski52. We always appreciate that, as do we appreciate ratings and reviews of the podcast if you happen to be listening on iTunes or Stitcher. That's really helpful, that thing you can do for us. Just takes a second to click 5 stars. Also, leave us any feedback while you're at it. We're always looking for ways we can improve here. John, to get things going here, we'll do a quick look back at week 1. And what I want to know is, how many Spencer Ware shares were you the proud owner of?
I had the majority of my lineups definitely had Ware in them, just because of, you know, the price, and then coupled that with the role that he was going to have. And, you know, everyone kind of knew that, you know, he'd be kind of the lead dog over a guy like Charcandrick West or something like that. So, I mean, it ended up being a chalky play, the same way that Dak Prescott ended up being one, just because of the price. But unlike Dak Prescott, Spencer Ware won us all some money this weekend. You know, like, he was, mm-hmm. I mean, he was one of the better running backs on the board. He was really efficient with what he was able to do. I mean, that was a crazy game by the Chiefs to be able to come back from that. I mean, I'm pumped about Spencer Ware right now.
Exactly. I mean, unless you were the rare owner of a DeMarco Murray, D'Angelo Williams combo, I mean, Spencer Ware was all over the place. He was 5,400 last week, and at that price against the matchup, it was it for me. You could put any old professional athlete, I guess, in Spencer Ware's spot against the Chargers and expect big things. He really came on in the second half there. However, price increased. He was 5,400 week 1. All the way up to 6,800 week 2. He's going to be going against the Houston Texans defense that is going to cause a lot more problems in that Chargers front 7. And we still are not sure about that, but we might see some Jamal Charles back. It is a little bit early to tell. One of those reasons why you got to keep an eye on the injury report. Stay tuned to rotowire.com. We're going to have you covered every single day. Right now, as it stands, Andy Reid not sure if Charles will suit up. So Spencer Ware could be very viable for season-long leagues, but I'm going to fade him a little bit in those daily lineups given the matchup this week.
That's fair. I mean, you know, Jeremy Langford, definitely, you know, he's a talented back in his own right for the Bears, and he had trouble, you know, getting the ball moving against the Texans this past weekend. So I see where you're coming from, and I think, you know, there's a tendency for people to overreact to things, and you know, they see that Spencer Ware did really well, and they chase those points.
Yep, you want to get a piece of that. You know, see, and if you're chasing points for a guy like, I don't know, Devontae Freeman last year, it brought you some success. I was guilty of chasing points, but I still snuck in a few 30-point FanDuel performances while he was still under 7,000. Of course, that's no longer an option here. Just be careful, a word of caution with Spencer Ware this week. I mean, I had him in every single lineup week 1. I didn't even worry about fading him or doing something different. I know a lot of people, when the Chris Ivory announcement came in, they switched over to TJ Yeldon against the Packers, who have a reputation for being a relatively porous run defense. They've got solid defensive backs, but a few younger players and a few question marks in the front 7 there, a couple of rookies, especially in guys like Kenny Clark and Blake Martinez here. Mm-hmm. But so a lot of people, because Ware and Yeldon were the same price week 1, a lot of people would shift maybe 10 to 20% of their lineups over to Yeldon. I didn't fall for it. Yeah. I mean, hey, at least he got a touchdown, so it wasn't a total dud. But I mean, Ware was the one player I owned across the board week 1. But I can tell you I won't own him across the board week 2.
Right. Good. Yeah, it's a good way of going about it. You got to diversify a little bit this time around.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go ahead and look at our show. I mean, our topic today is going to be week two running backs. So we're going to run down the top tiers. We're going to throw out some cash game plays for you. We're going to throw out some GPP plays for you here. But let's look ahead and look at, let's take a look at the Thursday night game just kind of on its own, because really, this is a decision you're going to have to make if you do want to play in some of those early action and get Thursday night games. However, the Thursday night game, Buffalo and New York, Bills and the Jets here, is the over-under. I mean, Vegas has this game right now. It's a pick'em in terms of who's going to win. I mean, who the heck knows how this is going to show up, this game being played in Buffalo. Over-under just 40.5. Now, Thursday games, I don't know how many studies have been done to prove this, but Thursday games, the inclination is that the scoring is a little bit lower. So if anything, that might help running backs a little bit. Maybe, I don't know, but when the game's only projected to be, like a 22-19 game, there's not a lot of room for profit here. But let's go ahead and look. I mean, do you have any interest in Matt Forte or LeSean McCoy? Both of these guys seeming like they're the workhorse backs for their respective teams.
Well, you know, you got to like the fact that McCoy, he ran pretty well in limited action against the Ravens on Sunday. I thought, you know, like occasionally, you know, he'd be a little bit bottled up in the backfield. He was still kind of able to wiggle his way for positive yardage. And, you know, you factor in the fact that Sammy Watkins, his foot is killing him right now. He's going to play this week, but you know he's not going to be at 100%. So I think Buffalo's going to lean on the run game even more this week. But at the same time, do you really want to get in on this contest just to have a running back going against the Jets? Because I don't.
Yeah, exactly. I'm right there in the same boat here. And I'm not sure, even for sure yet, Sammy Watkins will play this week because he was a non-participant in today's practice. He did dress for the team's walkthrough, of course, didn't have to do any contact there. And, I mean, it's a short turnaround, and he's going to play through a lot of pain. You'd think the NFL doesn't have a problem really hiking up their players with painkillers by any means. But that being said, I mean, this is a foot injury that does tend to have some complications. He does have a screw in his foot, yep. And I mean, it's not uncommon to see things be complicated there. I mean, I would be hesitant to play with a screw in my foot giving me problems either. Just the thought of having that thing nudging around in there makes me cringe a little bit. Sorry, listeners, because I just saw John cringe here, and he did not look comfortable with that. So anyway, I'm worried. I have one share of LeSean McCoy, but I'm a little bit worried about his production the rest of the season, because without Watkins, there is nobody else on that offense that can beat you on your own. So why not stuff the box with eight, even nine guys every single time? And they're going to become the Rams.
Yep. Yep, they become the Rams of upstate New York.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want no part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, Todd Gurley pretty much stuffed, because Case Keenum couldn't do anything on offense there on Monday night.
It was about as tough of a game to watch as you're going to find in any year, really. I mean, people, it was drawing comps to the Josh Freeman Vikings start. That was like the one game that people could think of that was quantifiably worse than what we saw last night.
Somehow, being a football junkie that's been without my addiction for so long, I did manage to watch that game from front to back, but that was a lot of random tinkering on the computer and dozing in and out of a nap there, because it was getting to be almost 1 a.m. Central Time here in the Midwest by the time that was wrapping up here. All right, but let's go ahead and shift focus here. We're going to start with the top tier of running backs on FanDuel slate here for week two. Now, David Johnson leads the way, 9,000 against Tampa Bay. Was pretty impressive against New England, had just that one very stellar run. Not worried at all about David Johnson. He's going to be one of your consistent backs. Then we've got Todd Gurley, 8,400. He was down in week one, and he has a really tough matchup here week two against the Seahawks. And then for $200 less, we go Adrian Peterson, 8,200 versus Green Bay. I mean, are any of these guys worth paying up for, John?
In my opinion, probably not. David Johnson would be the closest one, but I mean, 9,000, you know, that makes you really kind of have to question how you're going to parse that out versus going to get a top tier receiver that's going against a questionable secondary.
Because you're so dependent on him if you pay 9,000.
Oh, I mean, that's a huge part of your salary. And I mean, all these matchups are pretty tough. I mean, Tampa Bay, I think that defense has improved, and they really slowed down the Atlanta rushing attack in a big way on Sunday. I mean, obviously, Johnson is a bit of a different story than a Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman combo, but that's still something to at least consider. Gurley, obviously, going against Seattle, we know what we saw from the Rams. I would be highly surprised if he got more than 50 or 60 yards, and you know, I could see it being like he gets the majority of those yards on one run. The rest of the time, he's getting like 2 yards a carry just because the Rams don't get any push. And then AP, I guess he does usually do all right against Green Bay. I think you would know a little bit better than me, but he wasn't overly impressive week one, but I'm not worried about him as much as I am about Gurley right now.
Yeah, I mean, AP was bottled up. I believe he had less than 50 yards the first week of last year, but then he bounced back with back-to-back 100-yard games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a pretty good chance he actually hits 100 yards against the Packers. The Packers did really, they took care of T.J. Yeldon on Sunday. There's no doubt about that. But obviously, Adrian Peterson, even at an advanced age, if you want to call it that, I believe 31, 32 here, I mean, he's a much better, much more physical back, much more experienced back, and I think they're going to use him. They're going to give him the ball more steady. So I can see your case for Adrian Peterson. Now, Liz tried to sell me on Todd Gurley during the XM show this morning here, and here was his reasoning. Everyone's going to look at Todd Gurley's week one status and his production and his stat line and think, oh, that was terrible. Anyone that had to sit through and watch that whole game saw Todd Gurley get bottled up a lot, get a lot of gang tackled. I mean, San Francisco defense did a good job containing him.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. So you see that, and then you see the matchup against the Seahawks, one of the better front sevens in the league, probably a top five defense in the league, both in terms of fantasy and real life. So you see all these factors here, plus mix that with the price tag of $8,400. Nobody's going to own him.
That's true. That's the only case I could really come up with for in terms of justifying Gurley, because you know it's like a really expensive lottery ticket, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, yeah, with $8,400, nobody's going to own him, so you stay away from him in your cash games here. But I think you can make a pretty good case for Todd Gurley in GPPs, because I'm not down on him at all this season. I mean, he had a bad week one, sure. Is he going to bounce back? Oh, most definitely he's going to bounce back. I mean, he didn't look like a first-round draft pick week one, but he will for most of the rest of the season. And you look at your first-round draft picks in season-long leagues, they're matchup-proof. Essentially, you start them no matter what.
Right.
So Todd Gurley is a back that is skilled and certainly has the physical capability to go out there and run for 150 yards and 3 touchdowns. It's unlikely that he does that against Seattle,
sure.
But you never really know. And if he does do that and you have him in your lineup, you are one of the 0.5% of lineups that is rostering Gurley at that price.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you're way ahead. Now, it all depends on how you construct the rest of your lineup, if you're able to find a couple value receivers in there, if you can find week two's Willie Snead. I think that has something that would do very well for you, of course. But there is some GPP appeal to Todd Gurley just because I know he's a better back than he was week one.
That's true. That is an interesting case. I think that's something where, you know, when I'm putting together several lineups this weekend, I'll do a Gurley one in GPP.
Yeah. I mean, it's just something that you got to throw out there. I'm trying to make a case for Gurley. Chances are in most of my lineups, I'm not going to have much of either of these guys. I mean, Johnson's tempting, but that price is hefty for me. Gurley could be my $1 GPP if I'm going to enter the squib or something on FanDuel.
Right.
Like, that could be my Gurley play just to go ahead and see here. But more than likely, I'm going to look down to the second tier of running backs here for week two. We've got Zeke Elliott at 7,900 at Washington. I mean, Washington pretty porous in terms of run defense. Gave up a lot of action, a lot of fantasy points, almost 30 in PPR formats to D'Angelo Williams here. Ezekiel Elliott bottled up in week one. We'll see what he can do week two. Then there's C.J. Anderson, 7,800 against the Colts. Lamar Miller, 7,700 against the Chiefs. D'Angelo Williams, again, his price got a little bit of a bump, I believe a $400 bump, but he does get a better defense in the Cincinnati Bengals. Williams at 7,600 here. And then you got DeMarco Murray, pretty solid, 2 touchdown passes week one. He goes to Detroit here. We'll hit the second half of this tier in a moment here, but who do you like out of that first group of guys, if there's anybody?
I love me some CJ Anderson. I think, you know, not just from what he did production wise last week, but when you watch the game, he looked a little bit thinner, so he was quicker looking, and you know, he was able to make moves and make guys miss in ways that we weren't really used to seeing him. And he definitely had the lion's share of the workload out of that backfield. I think one of the big concerns for you know, trying to parse out the Denver backfield was, you know, how much work is Booker going to get? Obviously Hillman's gone, but you know, and then Booker goes ahead and fumbles his first touch, and you know, Anderson really just kind of seized control. And Indianapolis's defense is just bad, like at every single level, and it's not like Trevor Siemian is going to become like a Derek Carr where they're throwing it a ton all of a sudden for a young quarterback. So, I mean, they're still going to be leaning on the run a good bit here. And I think Denver's going to have the lead. They're going to be running the ball a lot in the second half. Indianapolis is going to get tired. Mm-hmm. I really like C.J. Anderson in this matchup.
Yeah, I could very much see C.J. Anderson ending up as one of my most owned players here. I'm going to pass over that first tier entirely, like I said, and go ahead and throw C.J. Anderson in there. He had 20 of the team's 29 carries. Of course, five of those were Trevor Siemian. Three of them were Devontae Booker, but I don't see Devontae Booker eating in too heavily after that fumble here. I mean, it's not like Kubiak's like a Belichick or a Coughlin where you're done after your fumble.
Right.
But at the same time, I think, you know, they might ease in a little bit more. It's C.J. Anderson's backfield. And yep. there's little to no question about that. And the matchup's just so juicy, John. I mean, you look at what the Colts were able to do against the Detroit pass rushing backs. Okay, so Ameer Abdullah, 12 carries, averaged 5.3 a carry. Theo Riddick, 7 carries, averaged 6.4 a carry. That was a little uncharacteristically high. But they're susceptible on the ground. I mean, and Detroit was attacking the outside. The Colts,
yeah, those guys are slashers.
Exactly. They don't have their best player in Vontae Davis, who's a pretty good tackle and defensive back here. Vontae Davis out for about the first month of the season. So they're going to attack the outside. I think Denver's going to do that too. But more importantly, you look at the Detroit backfield in terms of pass catching. Theo Riddick caught all five of his targets for 65 yards and a touchdown. Ameer Abdullah caught all five of his targets for 57 yards and a touchdown. C.J. Anderson generally thought of as a pass-catching back. I mean, we're going to get to this. I'll reiterate this at the end of the show, but I think C.J. Anderson's as chalk as it gets here for week two. And, I mean, you can maybe make a case for DeMarco Murray, something like that, at 7,400. I mean, because the Detroit defense was they gave up a lot of points as well in that, but it just necessarily wasn't to your Frank Gores or your Josh Fergusons or anything like
that. It's because it's Frank Gore and Josh Ferguson. Like I think this week will tell us a lot, but I don't think that Detroit necessarily. I mean, Detroit's run defense isn't as bad as Indianapolis's, and it won't be. I think they have a relatively strong line and front and linebacking core, but. Like you said, you know, like I think this is still a situation where Murray can take advantage, and he was using the pass game to an encouraging extent. So I mean, if he can get those linebackers chasing, you know, I think this sets up pretty well for him as well.
Mm-hmm. What about a bounce back game for Devontae Freeman? Now Oakland,
I'm starting to freak out, man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm starting to worry. I only own one share. Okay, so I've got like eight. I did eight drafts or something along those lines this year. And draft number eight, it was our 16 team office one that was like a couple days before the start of the season. Mm-hmm. My last draft. I always do some really wacky things. I had the 15th pick of 16. I took Devontae Freeman and Eddie Lacy with those two picks. I went running back, just to see how it would work out.
Sure.
In case I was completely full of it on all my other seven leagues and the guys that I like are complete duds, I went a complete side turn opposite direction with that league and went with backs. I'm going to tell you I'm a little bit nervous, but at the same time, we're looking at this DFS purposes. Devontae Freeman gets a price break down to 7,400, and he gets a Raiders team that, really, they kept Mark Ingram in check, but I think Mark Ingram's a much different back than Devontae Freeman, and I think this game is going to be one of the higher over-unders on the slate here. I'm going to see if that's out. That over-under is 53, so that is the highest over-under on the slate. Nobody else is approaching that there. Of course, there's a couple of them that aren't quite published yet, but for now, that game's the highest over-under, and I think Freeman's a decent chance to get a piece of that. I mean, if you wanted to use, let's say, C.J. Anderson and Devontae Freeman in cash games, that wouldn't cripple your lineup, and that'd be like a pretty good start, I would say.
Right. What I'm just trying to figure out, I'm looking at the numbers here. Freeman had 15 of the touches out of the Atlanta backfield on Sunday, averaged less than 2 yards a carry. Tevin Coleman had 13 of the touches, so 46%. So it was a 54-46 split. But Coleman couldn't do anything on the ground either. You know, all of his production kind of came through the air on that long reception. So I'm trying to figure out, I mean, that has to be an aberration too, at least a certain extent. I mean, we're not going to see a guy like Freeman, a guy that was really blowing up last year, just be held to less than 2 yards a carry again. Like that simply just won't happen, especially not against Oakland, even though Oakland does have an improved defense to an extent. And you know, I think Atlanta has a pretty balanced offense, certainly more so than what Oakland had to face against New Orleans last week. So I do sense a bounce back game from Freeman, but I do think that Coleman can also probably get his yards per carry up as well. If we see that split again, then I'm going to start to be more concerned about Freeman in a season long, because you know, when you're drafting Freeman in the top 20 picks, you want him to be getting like over 60% of the touches out of the backfield.
Absolutely. And you can't forget that Tevin Coleman was the starter last season before he was injured and effectively lost his job to injury because Freeman came out there and put on some big games and eventually became the top scoring player in all of fantasy last year. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't really take him on after that point. The last thing I want to say about that game, though, I think the Tampa Bay front seven is a little bit underrated. They've got big guys like Gerald McCoy and Clinton McDonald clogging things up in the middle. And then Lavonte David, I know he checks in really highly on our IDP rankings, a solid linebacker to kind of anchor that core.
Quan.
Yeah, and can't forget about Quan either. So
huge IDP day for me in the stake league.
Yeah, big time there. So, I mean, this Tampa Bay defense is, the pass defense, there's still a little bit of question marks. I mean, they shored things up a little bit by getting Brent Grimes, and then they've got Altron Werner on the other side. But the run defense is going to be improved, I think. And, you know, I'm not ready to pass too much judgment onto the Atlanta backfield there after week one here. Let's just quick wrap up the first half here with our 7,7100. Doug Martin, 7,100 at Arizona. Fade, that's number one for me. Arian Foster, 7,100 at New England. And maybe, I mean, he's no David Johnson. I could see it. Probably not on FanDuel. You got Latavius Murray. He is $7,100 here. He is going up against Atlanta, so that could be a potentially intriguing matchup. And then, of course, Mark Ingram at the Giants. They seem like they're having a pretty good rejuvenated defense, at least. Ingram checks in at $7,000. Eddie Lacy at Minnesota against a very tough run defense, $7,000. Anybody jump out from that group?
Frankly, no. If I don't get somebody from those first few guys that we mentioned there, I'm probably going to just sort of go towards the bargain bin. I don't think that any of those particular matchups or the particular running back himself does quite enough for me to where I'm going to just kind of go for this expensive but not real high upside type of back like an Arian Foster in New England or Latavius Murray against the Falcons. I mean, I guess that one's okay. But
well, I mean, the Packer fan in me wants me to think that Eddie Lacy has a potential to have a pretty big game. He did look better in the first game, didn't find the end zone, which hurt his fantasy line. Also, wasn't catching a whole lot of passes out of the backfield, which is a little bit uncharacteristic. At 7,000, I think there's a chance Lacy hits value, but it's not going to be in my core most important lineups here. So maybe some consideration, but definitely looking towards the top end of this tier, starting with Anderson as my foundation, and probably looking at some of these GPP options that we're going to discuss here in the next half. Well, fantasy football fans, the wait is nearly over. Football is back, which means FanDuel is back. And this year, it's better than ever. It's not just the new season at FanDuel, it's a new era. They've upgraded your entire experience with real improvements for everyday fans, and they believe you deserve everything sports has to offer, which makes you sports rich. Try the new FanDuel now. Just pick your team, stay under the salary cap, and have all the fun that fantasy has to offer. New to the game? Play in a beginner contest to learn the ropes. If you have just $1, there are games for a buck. There's 50-50 contests where the top half wins cash, or you can settle the score with a friend in FanDuel's brand new Friends mode. It's season-long fantasy football with weekly teams, plus new features ensure a fair and level playing field for all. Have all the fun that football has to offer. Have all the fantasy football has to offer. FanDuel, be sports rich. All right, John, we're going to examine what we're going to call Tier 3 of the running backs on FanDuel here for the Week 2 slate of games. Kicking things off with Spencer Ware. He's 6,800. We already had quite a discussion on him. We'll kind of move on here. Amir Abdullah checks in next at 6,700. The top performing back really for Detroit here, but looking more and more like he may have to share with Theo Riddick. Jamal Charles, he's a big question mark for the game. 6,700. I'm going to say fade for now. And then the 6,700, you've also got both Jonathan Stewart and Melvin Gordon at 6,700 there. Moving down the list, Justin Forsett, 6,600. Thomas Rawls, who split with Christine Michael, he's 6,600. Jeremy Langford, 6,500. TJ Yeldon, 6,500. Danny Woodhead, 6,400. Ryan Matthews, 6,300 at Chicago. Rashad Jennings, 6,300 versus New Orleans here. I know you mentioned that we were kind of fading the top tier. We're skipping over so much of that bottom half of the second tier here. Anybody here that stands out for you?
I think that you know, kind of under the radar is Jonathan Stewart here at 6,700. I think people are going to look at how San Francisco was able to handle Todd Gurley last night. And, you know, sort of like how we talked about earlier in the show, like overreact to it and lean on it a little bit too much. I'm not honestly super scared of San Francisco's defense on its face. I just think that they came in with a strong game plan and they knew that the Rams weren't going to be able to do anything other than hand the ball off. But in this case, they're going to have to deal with Cam. They're going to have to deal with a balanced offense that looked better through the air against, obviously a Denver defense that's arguably the best in the league. Cam was able to have some pretty good success through the air last week. So I think San Francisco's going to not have the luxury of being able to load the box. And I think Stewart, kind of like, he's a guy that's not going to be highly owned because he's not overly flashy. But I think this is a week where we could see him reach the end zone. We could see him get upwards of 80, 90 yards, getting most of the carries out of the Carolina backfield. And I think, Carolina's probably not going to want to run Cam a ton, especially after the beating that he took on opening night. So I think Stewart kind of is like an intriguing, like, oh, I almost forgot about him type of play.
Yeah, your last point almost convinced me there, but I'm going to kind of go ahead and disagree here. I'm not quite sure I'm high on Jonathan Stewart regardless of matchup. The performance of the San Francisco defense doesn't really help his case, but Jonathan Stewart's a player that Carolina has expressed interest in conserving for the long haul a little bit this year, and his goal line carries are getting vultured by the likes of Cam Newton and even Mike Tolbert. Yeah, so there's always that risk there. So, I mean, he's going to have to get in from 10 to 15 out if he's going to get that touchdown. That being said, I could see him being somewhat forgotten, being a GPP play for that reason. But if I'm going to spend $6,700, I'm probably actually going to go down the list and look at other GPP plays. For example, Justin Forsett. Now, I know he's got Terrence West to deal with, and that's a little bit concerning there in that case. But, that
he was more effective per carry than West was by a pretty fair margin last week, I thought.
Exactly. He somehow got two less carries than West, but he averaged 4.1 per carry, West only averaging 2.7 per carry. Also, Forsett more active in the passing game, targeted three times, caught three passes. West targeted twice, caught two passes for just 6 yards. Now, this Cleveland run defense here, we talked about it earlier. I mean, it's going to be, I mean, the Colts are always a defense to target. The Chargers will always be a defense to target. I think Cleveland goes in that same boat here. And I also think that the Ravens are going to be able to get ahead of Cleveland. I mean, I like Josh McCown maybe a little bit as a 1 week desperation flex option in a super flex league or something like that. But I still think Baltimore should win this game handily. I hope so, but
I don't know, man.
It is a road game. I know you're a Ravens guy here, and
McCown's given us fits in the past, but then again, I mean, he hasn't been working with the starters until this week.
But you've got Flacco back, and you've got Flacco with some reasonable weapons back. You know, Steve Smith played a role in week one. Mike Wallace could very well have a late career rejuvenation. So I think even though Baltimore is the road team in this one, I think Baltimore finds a way to get ahead and are going to be run heavy in the second half. And Cleveland, again, being a run defense to target, I do like Justin Forsett at $6,600, only in GPPs just because there is the Terrence West factor. There could be another even split, but if Forsett continues to perform well, I think they roll with him and he keeps going. So Forsett's someone that I'm going to look for in GPPs. Another guy I might look at in a GPP is TJ Yeldon, actually. Now, I know I dogged him a lot earlier. He didn't have the greatest game against the Packers, but again, looks like Chris Ivory hasn't even been released from the hospital yet.
Right.
So it's looking like TJ Yeldon's going to be an option. Now, Yeldon's price increased to $1,100 from week one. I don't like that one bit. But what I do like is the matchup he's got with San Diego and what they were able to do. I mean, you saw what Spencer Ware did to the Chargers here. Of course, they were in shambles after the Keenan Allen thing. But the Keenan Allen thing didn't affect the opposing team's run game at all.
Sure.
So, I mean, you saw what the Chargers are capable of allowing to opposing backs. So even TJ Yeldon, I don't like him. I don't have any season long. I don't plan on trying to trade for him in any season long. If anything, I'm picking up Ivory on the waiver wire this week and waiting until he's back, because he's the guy that Jacksonville spent the money on, and he's the guy who's going to really take over a big portion of that backfield here. So Yeldon, as a 1 week, week two, I might poke him in there and see what happens.
I mean, this would be the only time that I would consider using Yeldon. I'm extremely unimpressed with his ability to make people miss. I'm extremely unimpressed with his short area burst, being able to just kind of get beyond the line of scrimmage and make anything out of any sort of run. So, if he's going to do it, I guess it is this week. And, you hope that people aren't too overzealous about the fact that he was able to punch one in last week, so maybe his ownership would be higher than you would like it, but I don't necessarily see that happening, so I could definitely see where he's in play for a GPP consideration.
Exactly. All right, so before we throw out final GPP options here, we're going to, as we start to kind of wrap the show up, you got a chalk play of the day, John?
I mean, I guess it would just sort of have to be David Johnson for now. Just his versatility, both as a pass catcher and as, you know, one of the strongest looking runners in the entirety of the NFL. I think you got to like his chances. Even though Tampa Bay really showed up last week, I really like David Johnson's chances. If I'm paying up for like these really really expensive running backs, I probably would lean the Johnson route.
Yeah, see, I can't knock anyone going against Johnson, but 9,000 for a running back on FanDuel to me just cripples my lineup a little bit too much. So CJ Anderson, last week my guy was Spencer Ware. This week it's CJ Anderson. He's going to be the foundation of all my lineups, whether or not I come out profitable at all in week two is going to hinge heavily on CJ Anderson's performance. The only thing I'm afraid about is I might not be able to take advantage of any type of low ownership because it is very chalk, and I like CJ Anderson. So, but that's the guy that's going to go in for me. I might work a David Johnson lineup in there because I think he is capable of having a big game against Tampa Bay, but really David Johnson capable of having a big game against anyone. He's going to be 9,000 to 9,500 the entire year, and I'm going to probably try to save him for some of those out of division matchups against weaker run defenses here.
Smart.
Finally, anyone else you want to throw into the GPP mix, John?
I like the way that Theo Riddick got in the mix in the offense. I thought that was really encouraging. Charles Sims, like him all right, but you know that matchup is pretty tough. I kind of like Jeremy Langford as another just sort of, oh, I forgot about that guy option, because looking at it, he got 95% of the Bears' touches out of the backfield, and he gets an easier matchup this week going against the Eagles than he did going against a Texans front that, even though J.J. Watt wasn't 100%, guys like Whitney Mercilus and Jadeveon Clowney looked like the studs that they're supposed to be.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that was a pretty scary-looking defense from Houston that's only going to get better. So I think Langford, I mean, role alone there, it kind of makes you at least have to consider him as a tournament flyer, in my opinion. And it's just 6,500.
Exactly. I've got two more tourney flyers to throw in there. One of them's Christine Michael, who checks in at 5,900. He was a much better back than Thomas Rawls. More carries and a much better yards per carry average here. Now, granted, he does have the Rams, thought to be a very stout run defense. But watch, Aaron Donald almost went full-blown Kyle Turley in that game last night. And if he gets suspended by the league, that's a huge hit to their run-stopping defense here.
Yeah.
And their run defense didn't necessarily look great against Carlos Hyde. I mean, Carlos Hyde, you can almost put him in Eddie Royal territory as a week one superstar, especially after last year's performance against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But, you know, two touchdowns in back-to-back week ones now. But the Rams' run defense, I think they can be exploited, especially if they don't have Donald. It's a story to watch over the week. So you could get some potential out of Christine Michael. But the more and more I think about it here, I've got one other back that I'm going to try to pair up with CJ Anderson and at least a few of my lineups, and that is, surprise, surprise, Rashad Jennings here. He seemed to have a pretty good control on the New York backfield workload, carried the ball 18 times as opposed to Shane Vereen's 6. Eli Manning's not going anywhere with the football, no carries there, nothing to worry about. And they have the Saints. It's the highest over-under game of the week, and I got the lowdown from Chris List when I was doing XM earlier. He's a big Giants fan, and he kept saying that this game has Odell Beckham written all over it. He should have a huge game. Both him, Shepard, Cruz, Eli should be heavily used because it is the Saints. But then he also made the point that he doesn't think Ben McAdoo is the brightest guy, and because it's Ben McAdoo, he thinks that he's going to try to establish the run. And the Saints are a team that can have the run established all over them.
Is he projecting his Giants pessimism to the public?
Yeah, he might be projecting the Giants' pessimism to the public, but I do very well see a point. I think people are going to be maybe away from Rashad Jennings, who Rashad Jennings didn't turn a lot of heads. I mean, he averaged 4.2 yards a carry. If he gets 18 to 22 carries against the Saints' defense and can find the end zone once, I like him. Maybe not even just for GPPs. I think he has a pretty stable floor for your cash games.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I think just people are gonna harken back to last year's like insane shootout between these two teams and really load up on OBJ. So maybe it'd be a sneaky way of going about it, getting a share of that high scoring game to go the Jennings route. I actually really like that play.
Yeah, so one other player to consider. I think we've ran through and given all of our listeners plenty of options here. So best of luck to everybody in week one. In week two. Jeez. Before we sign off, we have a special offer for brand new FanDuel users. Get a free 6-month subscription to RotoWire with just a $10 deposit on FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com/RW. Not only will you get the free subscription, but you'll have that $10 available to play with on FanDuel, which can take you a long way if you execute some careful bankroll management. So that'll be over $40 in value, including the subscription for just $10. Again, that's fanduel.com/RW. If you're already a FanDuel user and want to check out the website on your own, RotoWire is a great resource. Keep you posted all week. Get you your lineups, your game day inactives, and plenty of articles, a lineup optimizer, all you really need to set those FanDuel lineups. You can check out the website free for 10 days, no credit card, no strings attached, by going to rotowire.com/pod. That's rotowire.com/POD for a free 10-day trial to get you through week two and beyond. Once again, I'm Jake Litarski. You can find me on Twitter at JakeSki52.
And I'm John McKechnie. You can find me on Twitter at JohnnyMckex.
The RotoWire Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast will return on Wednesday.